C7. Number 15B.
How is it possible that an idea that came to Jesus, as long as it was an idea, has an eternal impact? That the demonstration that he made, the healing that he did, has an eternal impact. How many people under different conditions have read it and have been healed by it, have had a blessing out of it? An idea has an eternal impact. So that we suddenly feel, my word, I have an eternal impact. We come to truth and we can therefore say that the fact of an idea, the consciousness of an idea, is the consciousness of the Infinite One. Or in love, we could see that the blessing of an idea is the blessing of the Infinite One. It is not therefore a little bit of a blessing. See, when we have ideas, we can never have a little bit of it. Never. See, this is the new consciousness we have to culture ourselves into it, to feel that we have to get out of measuring up everything in the way of space and time. I repeat it until you get tired of it, but this is the solution. We are over 2,500 years, are we now cultured and trained into just one frame of reference, that everything happens within time and space, everything. If you take away from any problem we have, if we take away time and space, the problem disappears. The problem disappears. It has only power, it only seems to be something because we put it into a narrow frame of reference. It's terrific. Yeah. Well, that would be the law that is governing here. Can you see how big that law is? Naturally, we are allowed to use that law in many other ways. Say, not only with these ideas which we have taken now, they are more or less those ideas which Mrs. Eddy used just in the chapter on creation. But naturally, we can take here any quality, any characteristic of any idea. We can in mind say, yes, I can see that the power of an idea is the power of the Infinite One. I can see that the law of an idea is the law of the Infinite One. That which characterizes the law is always that every quality is a quality of the Infinite One. That's the characteristic of it. No matter which quality we take. Yeah. All right. I think that's all what I can say on this subject. So we go further to the chapter Science of Being. We only really get the true perspective on that chapter when we first are quite clear about the following. Is this the science of being with a capital B, or is the science of being with a small b? The answer naturally is the science of being with a small b. If she would present the science of being with a capital B, then such a chapter would have no place in the textbook. There would have to be another textbook, because the science of being would indicate that it has to do with the level of science itself and not with the level of absolute Christian science or Christian science, because it is a science of the synonymous term if you write science of being with a capital B. And naturally, that science of being would then include the divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. But its main point would be to bring out the science of the capitalized terms. So here we have the science of being as a small b, And when we have a science of being with a small b, it must be a science of ideas, because being, small b, is just a general summary symbol for all ideas. Now, also the chapter on creation had to do with the universe of ideas, but here in the 10th chapter we don't deal with the universe of ideas, we deal with being, small b. What is the difference? The difference is that when we consider being, we really consider the question of, is life, truth, intelligence and substance in spirit or in matter? Being has to do that, in a material way, has to do that matter is not just inorganic matter, but organic matter, that matter lives. And in order for matter to live, the belief is that there is life in matter. Not only life in matter, that there is intelligence in matter, which makes matter act according to an intelligent plan, that there is a code in matter, just as we know it more and more today in biology, that matter comprises a code, and a very good code, that there is a lot of information put into matter, into the cells, that there is so life in matter, intelligence in matter, truth in matter, because we feel that we can rely on what matter does, that there is truth in matter. You know, we rely very much that the heartbeats go on very, very regularly over years and years and years, that there is a real good computer there which is rather reliable. And therefore we feel there is some kind of an unshakable truth in matter, and which functions very intelligently, and that there is a terrific computer there that can regulate to the tenth of a degree the temperature of our body, and that can regulate the pulse to very narrow fluctuations. That all needs a lot of intelligence and truth, you see. So there is the terrific belief that being, in a material sense, is actually seeing that there is life, truth, intelligence, substance in matter. That's the counterfeit sense of being. The fact about is that we would see that there is life, truth, intelligence and substance in spirit. That would be the fact about it. And when you read the textbook or this chapter, you will see that practically no other chapter than in this 10th chapter she would repeat in various orders, in various ways, always the same concept of life, truth, intelligence in matter, life, intelligence and substance in matter, intelligence, life, and substance in matter, substance, life, and intelligence in matter, or in spirit. This is our subject here. What does it mean? It means that her subject is actually the question of evolution. Is there evolution in matter, or is there evolution in spirit? How can we have evolution in matter if matter would not have intelligence and life and truth and substance in it? Evolution means that there is a very goal-directed, very intelligent guiding and steering mechanism in matter that brings the whole evolution forward, that started out somewhere with a living cell, and from there everything evolved through some kind of intelligence, through some kind of life, from some kind of truth and substance in it, evolved and evolved, changed the substance of it, gave more intelligence to it, like the brain that suddenly appeared, nerves, the nerve system that appeared, messages for truth and for intelligence, and so on. You can see that the whole sense of evolution is there for the belief that there is intelligence and life and substance and truth in matter. So these are the wordings that come up and come up and come up constantly, and therefore we can see that the fact about it would be that ideas evolve, that ideas have an evolution, that there is an evolution of ideas. And we know, therefore, that if we regard the evolutions of ideas or of thoughts, we come to the point of civilization, so that civilization is another way of evolution. It's the evolution in the mental realm, whereas biological evolution is an evolution in the material realm, but still it's evolution. And so we have a material evolution, we have a mental evolution in civilization, and she wants to show that there is a spiritual evolution going on. What is the place value of this fact of a spiritual evolution going on? An evolution of ideas. Well, we would see ideas are at the point of Christianity, that we know now. So what kind of Christianity is it? In creation we had Christianity as the word, because there it was just stated what is the form of the universe of idea, saying the form of the universe of idea is an infinite form. It's an infinite universe. Now, in the 10th chapter, she gives to that Christianity sense of idea the Christ aspect. The Christ is what? The Christ is that which has manifesting power, which has expressive power. That's the Christ. And so evolution is nothing else than idea expressing themselves always in a new way. So here we have Christianity as the Christ. And this is always an impressive point. Why? I think most students of Christian Science, when they think about the Christ, they always think about the Christ in its own aspect, namely that God has a Christ, that there exists a Christ. So that would indicate that second vertical in our matrix, that second four chapters of the textbook showing, yes, God has a Christ. God manifests itself. But very seldom do the students think that ideas have a Christ, that ideas also reflect the Christ. Because if we have one universe, the universe of spirit, we cannot split up being into four watertight compartments. The one is called the Word, and the other compartment is called the Christ, and the other compartment is called Christianity, and the fourth science. They all blend. Therefore, we can more or less even calculate that there must be a Christ for the ideas, that ideas must have a Christ, because the third big category, which says we have to do with ideas, must blend with the second category of Christ, and therefore bring out that ideas have a Christ. And this opens up, naturally, a completely different view, another aspect of being, where we really can see that when an idea touches us, it not only touches us, it has a Christ, therefore it begins to evolve. It has a Christ, but we know that the Christ is different on the level of absolute Christian Science and different on the level of Christian Science. which would mean in this chapter that an idea has a Christ in both ways. That it has a Christ in absolute Christian Science, which means I evolve that idea eternally. I evolve an idea higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. I evolve that idea. There is an evolution of idea going on, going right to the point of Omega, as Teilhard de Chardin would say it, an idea having a Christ that is directed to a far big aim, telefinalistically oriented, but that idea has also the Christ in Christian Science, namely that the idea has the power to resolve illusions. That's the sense of the Christ in Christian Science, that an idea has within itself the power to resolve, would you say resolve to, yeah, to resolve an illusion. And all that is in that chapter on the science of being, showing the wrong sense of evolution, material evolution, showing then the right sense of evolution, and as that right sense of evolution has a Christ by resolving the illusion, it resolves what? It resolves the material concept of evolution. Isn't it a big picture? And can you see that if we would know the system well enough, that we could have figured that out all by ourselves without having to take recourse to the textbook. We would have said, within the system it is now necessary that if I am now in the third column, at the point of idea, I can now see that idea reflects the Christ. What does it mean? Idea reflecting the Christ. If I know my levels, I know that that level will show on the level of absolute Christian Science that an idea evolves and evolves and evolves and evolves itself constantly, rising higher, rising higher, rising higher. And we would have to see that that idea has a Christ in Christian Science, namely tackling its opposite, resolving its opposite. Therefore, to see that as the idea evolves spiritually, that therefore the wrong evolution would yield before that evolution until it is resolved entirely, until it is overcome by the right idea, and the only thing that would go on then would be the right evolution. We could see that. And therefore we could, if we would now know the synonymous term, we could just put into this law the seven synonymous terms and show this law of an idea having a Christ and resolving its opposite. We just could put it right through the seven synonymous terms and see what the idea of mind evolves and what it resolves as the opposite concept of an illusion, what the idea of spirit evolves and resolves the opposite, and soul and principle, and we could build up the whole chapter on the science of being. Yes? Did you follow me a little bit? Yeah? Can you see that the textbook is not just a book that has been written by an inspired writer, or not even a book that somehow contains a terrific revelation from God, but that it is more, that it is a revelation of a system. And therefore that revelation had to obey the system, that it wasn't just a wild revelation of all sorts of nice insights, but that it was a revelation that had to go along the categories of a system and was not free, so to say, to state itself at random. It is in the straight jacket of the Christ. It is in the bonds of Christ. That's how Paul will call it. I'm in the bonds of Christ. That textbook just can't spell out any nice aphorisms. And therefore, if we begin to see the signs of it, what does Mrs. Eddy say then? She says, science reveals. She doesn't say God reveals. Science reveals. Can you see now what it does? It reveals along the system of science, in the straight jacket of the system of being, and has to obey the system of science. Yeah? But I think these are the things which we have to realize as time goes on, because only if we look at the textbook in this way, we treat the textbook as a textbook. If we don't see these things, we treat the textbook as a reading book, as a reference book, but not as a textbook, because a textbook teaches the system and not the phenomena. Yeah, well, that's what I want to say as an introduction into this chapter. Let's take the scriptural note 1 and see what it tells us. It says something absolutely revolutionary. It says, that which was from the beginning. See, that reminds us of the scriptural note of the chapter before, thy throne is established from old, thou art from everlasting. That which was from the beginning. And now comes the 10th chapter. Which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled. Can you see that it is materially tangible? We have heard, seen, looked upon, our hand has handled. Of what? Of the word of life. But the word of life is spiritual. The word of life is something spiritual. How else could he say that, somehow could touch that word of life which is spiritual through their material testimony? Goes on and says, that which we have seen and heard, again, declare we unto you, that ye also may have fellowship with us. And our fellowship is with the Father, the Word, with his Son, the Christ, and Jesus Christ, Christianity. Funny. There is a terrific sense that there is something spiritual, and yet you can declare it materially. And yet it shows itself forth materially. What is the relationship? What is the explanation of an apparent dualistic, apparent spiritualistic phenomena that they could handle and see and hear the word of life? What Mrs. Eddy really wants to show here is that which appears to be material evolution is actually spiritual evolution. But that which seems to be a material evolution is actually, when seen properly, a spiritual evolution. See, the word of life has a spiritual evolution, but we could handle it and see it. Can we see the material evolution that has gone on for the last 3 million years, a billion years, that evolution from the first living cell up to man who can go and have computers and go on the moon, is that not an evolution which we can see, which we have heard, which our hands can touch? Is it actually a material evolution? That's what she asks here. Is this material evolution actually a material evolution? Or is it the word of life? The word of life is a spiritual evolution. The word of life is mind leading to spirit, spirit leading to soul, soul leading to principle, and leading to life, and leading to truth, and leading to love. This is the word of life, the spiritual evolution that we cannot touch with our hands. Is therefore the material evolution an evolution per se, so that we have two evolutions? That's the dualistic sense in here. Is there a spiritual evolution, and is there next to it a material evolution? So this would be our dualistic sense. Or is there what we feel, innately feel, only one evolution? And if there is only one evolution, how do we explain that we feel that there are two evolutions? This is the great question.